One of the country's leading businessmen has rode in unashamedly to back the bankers. And despite a wave of public anger about a so-called golden circle, Ulic Makavady has defended the 10 top people who were loaned €300 million to buy shares in Anglo-Irish Bank. He says he would have gotten involved himself if they had asked him. Ulic Makavady, good morning.
Morning, Pat, how are you?
So if the call had come and said, look, Ulic, we want you to...
Oh, I've no doubt. I'm going to support them. Well, first of all, this is a great bank. It's an iconic bank. It had a history of doing very, very sound business deals, infrastructure deals. It has banked over €400 billion in the last 20 years. And you think what a stimulus that was for the economy. Also, at that time, Bank of Ireland and the EIB were more staid. So Anglo woke up this pair of sleeping giants and stimulated the Irish economy, and we got the Celtic Tiger.
Now, the people would say they indulged in practices that were not traditional banking. They were more, they were not risk-averse, shall we say, in the way that banks traditionally are. They gave money to people who were going to develop speculatively, for example. And if it did wake up the sleeping giants of AIB and Bank of Ireland, it led them down a sorry road.
Well, I think the only thing that was sorry was the lending 100% mortgages plus was the wrong thing to do when the market and the residential property was already overheated. 4 years ago, we should have pulled back on that. We didn't, because the government weren't willing to do so, because they were getting huge tax remuneration from the stamp duty. So I think we're all probably culpable for the 100% mortgages. But now is the time to have 100% mortgage, because now is the time we need that to stimulate the economy.
And the prices are down.
And the prices are down.
Let's go back to the whole business of the Golden Circle. I mean, if someone rings you up and says, look, we want you to borrow €30 million, but don't worry.
We're not sure that that is exactly what happened, that they borrowed €30 million. I'm afraid that that's not entirely accurate. My information is that a lot of these people have personal securities on the line for the money they borrowed from shares.
Because the story in, say, last Sunday's Independent was that each of them got €30 million. That there was recourse initially, but then when they saw Anglo's shares going down the tubes, that recourse was renegotiated. So the recourse would only to be to the shares, which were going down the tubes, and therefore no recourse at all.
Well, if that is the case, I mean, we haven't seen that clarified. I've seen lots of erroneous reporting on this matter. Who said there are 10? I thought there were 25. You know, I'm not so sure that the accuracy of what's in the public domain is verifiable, you know.
But how could you have accepted an offer that, as the shares were vulnerable, and we know because Sean Quinn the owner of 25% of the bank, and they wanted to reduce that to render the bank less vulnerable to 15%, so they had to dispose of 10% of the bank's value to other people. I mean, what would persuade people to take on that liability,
I think,
unless they were given some guarantees?
Well, I actually think the loyalty to the bank, first of all. I'm sure that the people who were in this position, who got the phone call, were customers of the bank who had been very successful as a result of the bank's indulgence over the years. So I think it was only right and natural that they would ride in to the rescue of the share price of the bank.
Do you know who they are?
No, I don't. But I know one guy who's lost a lot of money on this banking business, you know.
In this Golden Circle, one member of this so-called...
I know that has lost €15 million on the bank issue.
All right. You say that they should stand up and be counted because they've nothing to be ashamed of.
I think they're heroes. They were prepared to put their selves at risk, their financial position at risk, to support the bank. And I think that is what we need to do, support our banking institutions, if we're going to recover quickly out of this world economic war.
The Office of the Financial Regulator is now saying that they feel maybe they were misled a bit, that, what was proposed to them is not exactly what happened.
With due respect to all of these institutions, I mean, we've had 10 years of goddamn tribunals. Are we going to have another 10 years of recriminations about the bank sector? We are where we are. Now, if Brian Linehan were a brave finance minister, he would call Sean Fitzpatrick and say, Sean, I need your advice to help us get out of this. I would call Brian Goggin and say, Brian, I need you every second day in here to help me out of this crisis, because we need the brains and the lateral thinking
of
these bankers.
Peter Bacon to advise them.
Yes, but I mean, let's look at it this way. Sean Fitzpatrick and Brian Goggin and Eugene Sheehy, they are the people who know how to get us out of this problem. We're not going to fire the top bankers and expect to win this war. That's what the Ayatollah did in the Iran-Iraq war, and he wondered why the Shah's finest army were defeated by a ragtag Iraqi army. Well, he shot all his generals, didn't he? And then sent the army to war. And that's what we're in danger of doing here if we don't pop up.
You drew an analogy, a rather strange analogy, to a swingers party where, you know, people, men and women, go along, they bring their partners in life, and then they throw the car keys onto the table and... or whatever they throw onto the table, but who ends up with whom? Now, explain the analogy that you made about why there's stasis in our banking system.
How does that get into the public domain? Well, no, essentially, the whole issue is that there are banks with large diseases, but nobody knows which bank it is. So no banking institution, and this is the world at large, is doing interbank lending. So as a result, you have paralysis in the world market. As a result of paralysis, the world trade falls. Confidence in the retail sector has fallen. So you have this global economic tsunami that nobody, it's uncharted territory. Nobody actually knows the real solution to this.
But your analogy was actually very good, because you say in a swingers party, and everyone's
arriving. Well,
there
wouldn't be Jackson, I said. nobody knew who the toxic ones were.
Yeah, yes. If there were two people with HIV and no one knew which two they were, there would be very little action at the swingers party.
That's correct, yeah.
And you're saying that's the way it is with banks.
Well, that's exactly. That's what I was saying about the banks, that the unfortunate thing is that the confidence in their asset base and in their value is so eroded now that no bank will do interbank lending. And as a result, you have paralysis.
Well, what would you do?
What would I do to stimulate the economy?
Yeah.
I would have an SSIA2, where you would actually have the SSIA type of investment, where you'd allow any member of the public to invest 20 or 25,000 in our banking sector, leave it there for 5 years, and earn the interest tax-free. That, if the government did so, would stimulate the economy. It would also provide well-needed capital for the banking sector. I would now is the time, instead of the 100% mortgages were being given out at the wrong time because the market was overheated, it didn't need that 100% stimulus. Now is the time it does need it. So now I would go back to the 100% mortgages.
How do you stop the developers? You know, the best advice that was given seemed to be let the market decide what the real price of an apartment or a house is. If you start stimulating it this way, you know, incentivizing people, what's to stop the developer from simply pocketing the loot?
Well, I think one needs to get the developer working. Otherwise, the government finances are down. I mean, when you look at it, what's wrong with our public finances? Well, they've gone from $13 billion in 1999 to $39 billion today. That's three times the increase. So in order to get that money came from the development sector. It came from the stimulation that happened in the housing and in the office market. Now, everybody knew the housing market was 20-25% overvalued, but nobody actually cried stop. We probably should have. And we're all culprits in that respect. But to get us out of it now, what do we do? So I think we have to stimulate our banks, stimulate the retail sector. For example, there's 100 billion on deposit today. That's 7 billion more than when the SSIAs were substantially contributing to deposits. So people are scared to spend money.
You think it's about how do you persuade people who are in secure employment or who are retired and who have nest eggs or savings, which are now guaranteed by the state,
yeah.
How do you persuade them to go out and you know, get the extension built or fit the new kitchen or buy the new car or to, you know, take a holiday?
Well, the interest
do all
rates
the things
are very,
that people are terrified of.
You know, the interest rates, the European Central Bank interest rates are at an all-time low. The unfortunate thing is that because of the high risk value in the market today, that the margins have gone up. So the banking margin is not reflecting the low European Central Bank rates, which is unfortunate because I do believe that with the interest rates so low, that borrowing is at an unprecedented low level, the cost of borrowing.
So if you want to do something and you are in secure,
now is the time to do it.
Now is the time to borrow the money and put that builder to work.
Absolutely. I mean, you have the low interest rates, combination of low interest rates and an anxiety in the community to stimulate the economy.
And, you know, what will happen if you're wrong, if it turns out that what this golden circle, so-called, did is against the law? Now, whatever their motivations were, you know, paying Anglo back for the favours that Anglo did them over the years, maybe giving them money for speculative ventures that turned out well and made them a profit, but when they might have been turned down by other banks, so they say, OK, we'll do this for you. A bit worried, might be a bit legally dodgy, but
well, Pat, we're in an economic war. And unfortunately, sometimes the Geneva Convention gets offended. But I believe that in this economic war, we need heroes. And those people are the heroes who are prepared to come forward and do something to try and solve problems. Negative thinking is not going to solve.
Sean Fitzpatrick won't be back, though, no matter what you say, because of his concealing of the loans, which is absolutely wrong.
Yeah, sure.
He should definitively be wrong.
Yeah, he shouldn't have concealed the loans he did. And he's unfortunately paid the price. But if I were the Minister of Finance, I'd be calling Sean Fitzpatrick and saying, Sean, I need your advice. I need your lateral thinking. I need help. He can't solve this problem alone.
Well, he might get advice from another source. Joe Higgins, you're joining us on the line, no longer a TD, but still very much a socialist. What do you have to say to Ulick Macavati?
I think in the minds of working people out in our society, they would think Mr. Macavati is living in a parallel universe. I mean, if we were to take him seriously, we'd be rushing out to strike medals of honour for services to humanity of these 10 speculators and Anglo-Irish banks. I would say instead of labeling them Machiavelli as heroes, the working people who are suffering from the activities of these and others in the elite of our society would want to give them a badge of infamy. Now, in the real world, we've come through a 10-year period of incredible speculation, profiteering, gambling on the property market by a small group of very rich speculators, developers, and big bankers who were gambling with society's assets and at huge cost to society. First of all, of course, the young generation of working people in their 20s and their 30s who are saddled with now 40-year mortgages and very punitive levels of mortgage as well, to what? To fulfill the greed that these people indulged in. And of course, as was inevitable, the whole house of cards has now come crashing down.
Okay, but Joe,
and society as a whole is the victim, with thousands of workers losing their jobs and a vicious assault on living standards and wages of other workers. And Mr. Machiavelli wants to give these people the honour of calling them heroes.
What about the ambiguity there? Because we were made aware that the financial authorities wanted Mr. Quinn's stake in Anglo diluted. They thought it made Anglo-Irish banks very vulnerable. And they said that to Anglo-Irish Bank, and this is the mechanism by which Anglo sorted it. You know, there is a kind of an ambiguity there. Do something, and this is what they did.
Well, you see, Pat, there was no ambiguity as far as the Fianna Fáil Progressive Democrat governments, successive government was concerned in this. They were on the side of the speculator and the developer and the big banker. They not just facilitated that, but they legislated for it. And at no stage, despite many appeals by myself, for example, to the then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern to stop this catastrophic increase in house prices that was going on, this endless speculation, they encouraged it and told people who were warning of the dangers that they should go off and kill themselves. Now, I noticed Mr. Machiavelli as well is very anxious to have us all implicated in this, the words he used. Similar to Minister for Finance Lenihan some time ago, this is something he said referring to the huge property spiral and speculation. This is something we all wanted. Our Minister for Defence, Willie O'Dea, last week, we were all bewitched by life regulation. We weren't all bewitched. Most people were the victims of this. Do you think that the people with the 30 to 40 year mortgages wished to be involved in this terrible grind that they're now facing? It is true that there was ambiguity, if you like, on behalf of the state, but that was a right-wing government which was standing over and legislating for this splurge of profiteering and racketeering, and we couldn't expect anything else from them.
Well, I wouldn't expect anything else from Joe but what he said, you know. I mean, if Joe had his way, we'd have an awful lot more unemployment, and we'd have a substantial collapse in our financial sector, and we'd have unprecedented depression for the next 10 years. We need, Joe, positive thinking, not negative thinking like you're coming out with here. And I'm surprised that you don't see the merit of the people who can at least buy houses and have a 40-year mortgage If you see that as no merit, well then, Joe, I think you're on the wrong planet, not me.
I'm afraid now, Mr. McFadley, that if you think it's a pleasure for working people on the average industrial wage, working all the hours that they have to pay for a level of mortgages that are just punitive, to say the least, and for 40 years, for what? To make a massive profit for your friends. Do you think that people should revel in that? Now, far from what you said, in regard to what I stand for, it is your system. It is the system of capitalism and the gambling and profiteering that has been indulged in that is threatening us now with the incredible scenario of perhaps up to 500,000 of our people unemployed.
Well, Joe, okay, we are where we are. What's your solution?
No, that's sorry. You see, your class and your political friends as well are very anxious to try and draw a line under the last 10 years. No way. We have to, you see...
The facts are somewhat different. The facts on the matter are the bankers lent $2.3 trillion in money to institutions and businesses in this country over the last 15 years. Supposing only 15% of that was taxed, went to the taxman. Now you have $300 billion of developers' money, that you call it, going into the tax system to build our infrastructure, which was badly needed. We didn't spend another $200 billion on infrastructure. And you find that reprehensible?
What we have is trillions of dollars in euro flushing around stock exchanges and the financial markets of the world, looking for extra profits at every hand's turn, not really creating wealth as a matter of fact, gambling on society's assets. And now, as we've seen, that has inevitably crashed. Now, you mentioned, Mr. McVally, we are in an economic war. Hmm. What we are in, actually, is a one-sided war of an attack now on workers' jobs, on the living standards of working people, on the wages of public sector workers. For what? To make up for the crash and the crisis that has been caused by the type of gambling and speculation, I call it racketeering, that went on in the Irish property market over the last 10 years. And what I would do about it is, I would take the banks into public ownership, I would put them under democratic control, then I would invest in industries and enterprises like the SRT aircraft maintenance in Dublin and Waterford Glass, where workers are in occupation to save their jobs, and in a rational, reasonable, democratic way, we would create the wealth that was needed for society.
Joe, can I just ask you a technical question here about SR Technics or Waterford Glass? If every piece of glass they cut is being cut at a price at which it cannot be sold on world markets, because in Eastern Europe or in Asia they're cutting glass a lot cheaper, how do you propose to sell the produce of Waterford Glass?
Well, that's not self-evident, Pat.
No, I'm just asking if. It's only a question, Joe. I don't know what the economics of this.
Yes,
but
okay.
We do know that Waterford Glass, for its marquee range, went to Eastern Europe to get it cut because it wasn't economically viable for them to do it in Waterford. So I'm just asking you that question. Do you keep propping up companies that can compete at world market prices?
Well, what we do know is that Waterford Wedgwood, of course, was itself the subject to speculation and leveraging and all the rest of it, right? Now, in relation to the present situation where we're at and how it would work concretely,
Sir Anthony O'Reilly has put
$400 million.
Yeah. No, Sir Anthony O'Reilly lost
$400 million.
$400 million
of his family's money.
Okay. What we have is hundreds of workers, men and women of very high skill, an industry that's very important to Waterford and to tourism in the area. I say now, bring the workers to the heart of a discussion, the management of a publicly owned crystal company, and discuss with them and with people who sell the glass, like the Kilkenny shop who said on your programme, Pat, a month or so ago, that there was huge demand for this. Let's talk about new lines that workers can create that would be affordable and that people would want. And by the way, in passing, that was another downside of the profiteering and speculation in the property market. The young people were paying so much for their mortgages, they could afford less to put beautiful objects in their home, like Waterford Glass,
That sounds a bit like let them eat cake, Joe. If you know, Crystal is not top of the menu for most young couples.
Of course.
Maybe an LCD TV is, but not.
Yes, the point. No, the point I'm making, Patrick, this is an important point. That if people are put to the pin of their collar, which they have been by the profiteering by the developers, that so much of their disposable income is going on mortgages, they then have less to spend on other products in society which keep workers in jobs. And okay. By the way, the advocates...
Mostly Chinese workers, it has to be said, Joe, because a lot of the stuff in your shops is made in China.
Yes, but hold on. The logic of what the big business spokespeople and their friends in government, the logic of what they are saying now is that workers' wages have to be driven down, both in the private and the public sector. Now, first of all, it's an economic nonsense. Hold on a second. Let me finish the point, please. It's an economic nonsense. If you slash, for example, the wages of public sector workers, which is proposed and I hope will be resisted, which it is being, but if you slash that, that means there is less money by those workers to spend in shops, in restaurants, and so forth. And that adds to the unemployment in the private sector, not the opposite. And the question is, you want to drive down the wages of Irish workers to what level? To Polish levels? To Chinese levels? To Indian levels? Where does the race to the bottom end?
Okay, Joe, stay with us. We are inundated with comments, but I want to put this to Ulrich McAvady. Says, don't waste this interview with Ulrich. Ask him what he thinks of the future for SR Technics. That's from John Mulligan. What is your view? Why has it gone badly wrong for them?
Vital industry, our aviation industry, talented, extremely talented workforce. I know most of them. And the problem is that their cost per man hour was €70 per man hour.
That's what they billed.
That's what they bill. If you're pulling an airplane for overhaul there, it's €70 per man hour. Now, we can do that's work in the United States, and airplanes fly easy, so they're not dependent on a local workforce, and that's the problem we have here. In the United States, which is a first world economy, we can do the same work for $50 to $55 a man hour.
That's distinct from €70.
€70. So that is the problem that SR Technic faced.
Now, can it be rescued?
Absolutely. It's a must do.
Must do.
Oh, yeah. We cannot afford to allow this workforce to dissipate because we will never get the skill set back again. Remember, these people have 50 years of aviation experience. You don't get that overnight. I mean, they've been taught by their forefathers how this repair is done, how that repair is done. An extremely complex business. And I believe that we have to put a rescue package together for it. My solution would be that the hangars would be made available by the government to a collective of the workforce. Let the workforce become shareholders and masters of their own destiny. This might sound Joel now. Joel, we can together work on this in a positive fashion so we can get the workforce into the business themselves. So they control their own destiny. Make them own shareholders.
All right. If they make profits, they share the profits.
Correct. And let them take a wage hike downward until such time as the thing is profitable.
But they share in the good times.
Share the good times. Yes.
Joe, does that excite you?
Well, I'll tell you something. It certainly underlines the crisis in our system when Ulrich McAvady is now advocating as a kind of public ownership, but not really the kind that is absolutely viable.
Not yours.
We have to say that the genesis of this problem in SRT Technics it was the privatization of the Aer Lingus maintenance and then the privatization of Aer Lingus itself. And once they were given over to vulture capitalists, then, of course, they were out of any social control and the needs of working people and the needs of their communities came strictly away down the line, didn't feature at all, in fact. We had at the top, one of the top dogs here flew in from Zurich in the most brutal fashion, informed workers with no dialogue, no pre-discussion, that they were all out of a job. Over 1,000, including 60 apprentices. An outrageous way, but that is what vulture capitalists do. So I say...
So Joe, just let me get this right. You wanted Aer Lingus to stay in public ownership with all the manning, as some would say overmanning, and all the other things they did, sourcing their repairs in whatever would be good for the greater Dublin region in terms of the social benefits, while Mr. O'Leary would be going to the cheapest place on earth to get his aircraft and competing directly with Aer Lingus. How does that, how is that circle to be squared?
Well, Mr. O'Leary's logic is fine. If we can all get the slow boat to China and maybe live over there at Chinese rates...
No, I'm just wondering, this is not a theoretical competition. This is a real-life competition between two airlines working out of Dublin Airport, one which would source the cheapest possible repairs and maintenance, and the other which would be paying the price that you would want to pay, bearing in mind the social benefit of employing the workers and keeping people in jobs.
Yeah, that type of destructive so-called competition is hugely destructive to society as a whole. It's not just about a bunch of workers in Dublin.
How do you stop it, Joe?
And what we wanted, certainly, and my colleague, as you know, you've spoken to her, Claire Daly, is a shop steward in everything. This has a real interest in the company being successful. What we wanted was that certainly Aer Lingus would remain in public ownership. We wanted the workers at all levels brought to the heart of the management of that company so that it could be developed in a planned way, guaranteeing decent wages and reasonable income and guaranteeing a top-class service for our people. Now, Aer Lingus has made huge profits.
Hang on, Joe. Haven't people voted with their feet going on Ryanair, the so-called low-fares airline, thus dragging, if you like, Aer Lingus down into that marketplace, or up, as Michael O'Leary would probably have it? You know, the people that you want to be patriotic have actually already voted with their feet.
The fact is, Pat, that Aer Lingus has, over the last 5 or 6 years alone, made considerable profits, and over 30 or 40 years has made huge contributions to our society in the form not just of the service, but of the huge amount of taxes, for example, that the workers have paid for our services and investment in society, far more, in fact, than some sectors of society with a much greater sector of the population involved.
Yeah, now, on that basis, Joe, wouldn't you get the government to employ everybody at whatever rates just so they could get the tax? That doesn't add up, you know. You know, pay people massive wages so the government gets its tax hike, and
they have to come from somewhere. It has to be created.
The question is, what is in the interest of society? What is in the interest of human beings living on this island? Ordinary working people, their families, their communities. The vulture capitalists who are dominating the market. And by the way, it's really says a lot when you hear politicians are supposedly democratically elected and leading this country, and their question about everything that is proposed with regard to the banks, for example, is how will the markets react? What will the markets think of that? And that those policies should be dictated by the market. Who elected the market, and who are the markets?
Well, the market is reality, Joe. Whether you like it or not, the market is a reality. And if the market doesn't like it, you don't have the business.
And the market is a dictatorship, Mr. McInvady.
Well, unfortunately, that is the reality, Joe. The market does dictate, and it dictates worldwide. It has never done otherwise, you know?
Last time I looked...
So deal with the reality of life.
The official propaganda of the government of the state is that we live in a democracy. Now you are confirming that, in fact, we live in a dictatorship of the market. Who is the market?
You're confusing economics, Joe, with democratic elections.
Let's look behind. Who is the market? Can you name the market?
I'll tell you who the market is. The market is the consumers who buy product and pay money across the counter for product.
The markets are a few hundred top corporations, big banks and financial institutions, and billionaires. That's who the market is, who make decisions every morning depending on where they can, leech more profit, whether it's through juggling money around or anywhere else. And what happens to working people, their communities, poor people in the third world or anything else, is immaterial to them. That's the dictatorship under which you and your political friends in Fine Gael and the PDs and Fianna Fáil have put yourself in their hands. We say, we democratic socialists say, a different type of world and society entirely, where production, financial institutions, etc., are democratically owned and controlled, and we plan for the benefit of society.
Joe, Stalin tried to change the world that way too, and it didn't work. So did Lenin.
No, Stalin didn't.
Anyone who's tried to do what you're advocating, they always failed.
No, Mr. McInvady, you must go and read your history. Stalin was a brutal dictatorship, which, in fact, taught us socialism that we're still trying to cope with, as indicated there by yourself, trying to insinuate that this was it.
Is Fidel Castro your hero, Saul? You know, I mean, who has been successful?
For your information, you know, we need a long time to give all the history lessons, but for your information, Fidel Castro modeled his state in the 1960s in the image of Stalinist Russia, and whereas we do defend absolutely the gains of the Cuban Revolution, the tremendous health services and education that has resulted as a result of the ending of landlordism and the American multinationals, we want a new revolution, if you like, there for democratic rights and workers' rights at all levels of Cuban society. That's the type of future. And I think that the present crisis in this economy in Ireland and internationally will now give rise, and is giving rise, in fact, to a new debate entirely in regard to how should our society and our world be organized, moving away from this vicious system of dog-eat-dog and of profiteering by a small elite who put then at their mercy hundreds of thousands and millions of working people and their communities to huge costs.
Can I interrupt this just to bring you some of the comments coming from our listeners? This is about Ulick. Who is this guy trying to convince? Let him try and talk like this to the poor sap who's lost his job due to the risk the banks took. Sad excuses. It's a wind-up. As regards generals in the present case, they've already lost the war. About Ulick saying the people who took the loans of 30 million to buy shares in Anglo, heroes. Oh, spare me. Forgive me if I don't mourn the loss of their millions. They were in it for profit. They were gamblers. When you gamble, you can and usually do lose. That's from Anne. More. By all means, keep the bank's CEOs, but pay them the average industrial wage. That's from Katie. Get the Ayatollah here fast. Tell the elitists to wake up and smell the coffee. Sack them all. Bring in bankers from Germany and Canada, says another one. Fair play to Ulick, muddying the waters to allow his buddies to get away scot-free. Another one says, this man seems to be making some sense. People are acting like the mob at the Tuileries. That's from T. Divine. Someone else suggests that Ulick has made a good start to a new career in comedy. From Tony Hartnett in County Clare, Mr. McAvady must live in cloud cuckoo land if he believes that the same clowns who head our banks and got us into the current financial mess are the same people who can get us out of it. All we want from these people is their resignations and a return of bonuses for their collective abysmal failures. I'm losing the will to live. Get him off. The most negative man in Ireland. That's about you, Joe, not about Ulick. Your interviewee says that nobody shouted stop about the property bubble. I seem to recall that any time a commentator dared to mention the obvious that the property bubble would burst, they were told to be quiet, to go off and commit suicide by Bertie Ahern. Question, why would we trust people who created the mess to solve the crisis? Heroes, ha! More like generals who sent the soldiers into the trenches and to their doom in World War I. Mr. McAvady is talking a lot of guff. That's from Louise Curtin. Mr. McAvady is in denial about our problems. He's part of the problem. 100% mortgages, SSIA2. His recipe for getting out of the mess is to go back to the same failed policies. Why give him a platform for his crackpot ideas? Heroes, Mr. McAvady is obviously a muppet. Mr. McAvady sounds like a brothel keeper justifying his trade. The man you have talking at the moment knows nothing of economic history. Boom speculators keep making the same mistakes over and over again, and one of the associated phenomena is their pride in their own self-perceived superior intelligence. The hubris of the man speaking now after the bust is breathtaking. Tell him to read Galbraith. That is, if he can read anything other than the checkbook. That's for you, Ulick. From John Wallace. Listening to Mr. McAvady, I know now why the country is as it is. He's part of an elite that is so close to the government and so far removed from reality, they do not know what it's like to be 3 to 6 months paychecks from homelessness and to have to worry about life. A wonderful spoof interview with the guy who backed Ganley in the No to Lisbon campaign. Like all great spoofs, the realistic tone of the interview is a marvellous setting for the lunacy. Well done. Bring in Goggin and Shawnee to sort things out. I nearly died laughing. If this man needs a career change, he should consider comedy. It's a theme running through this. Mr. McAvady is bonkers on bankers. The bank has brought not only the banks, but the country to its knees. Mr. McAvady was part of the group who joined Ganley to reject Lisbon. Where does he stand now? He's part of the Golden Circle himself. He's kin to Captain E.J. Smith saying the Titanic had no flaws. It was only the icebergs. that were at fault. And I could go on reading this. You don't get away scot-free either, Joe. There's some stuff coming in saying that you're negative, even when Ulick came up with the idea of SR Technics becoming a workers' cooperative. You couldn't even give that your support, says a texter.
Well, in fact, Patsy, maybe if there was one or two positive messages from myself, you could read them as well. But the point is that just now settling the workers here with all the problems is just highly unfair, having made a profit on their backs for, you know, a generation. Public ownership would mean that it would be taken into public ownership, so the workers should be brought to the heart of the management of that, and then with Aer Lingus, and which should be taken back into public ownership, by the way, let's work out a problem, or let's work out a plan for aircraft maintenance in the best possible way. That's the real underpinning of over 1,000 jobs in this very important industry, the 60 apprentices and many more apprentices and young people who will find.
Well, Joe, how do you get your cost? How do you get your cost per man hour down from €70 to $50? That's your problem.
Well, in fact, when this gentleman came over from Zurich, workers told me from SR Technics that he wasn't even prepared to even enter into discussion with them. The fact is, I have great belief in the wisdom of workers. This whole crisis in our society at the present time brings to mind what was said about the working class soldiers of the First World War, heroes left by donkeys. So let's have the real wisdom, experience, commitment of workers brought to bear on these issues, and they will find the solutions on the basis of democratic public ownership.
All right, just if you could address that question, Joe, because it is at the heart of SR Technics and other activities around the country at the moment. If you look in a very mobile industry that it can go anywhere for its repairs, is getting quoted in America, as he said, a first world economy, $50 an hour, and SR Technics were charging €70 an hour. What is the solution to bringing costs down? I mean, the ESB will do its bit, we're told by the energy regulator. What else could be done to make the workers competitive? Because they're going to have to go after global business.
Well, by the way, Pat, and the ESB, you had the madness of privatisation, where the ESB was instructed to keep its prices high. You know that yourself.
Yeah,
we discussed it before, incredibly. They're not allowed to bring down the prices. Why? To make it more so-called profitable, so that competitors come in and sometime in the future will bring down the price. You couldn't find it in Alice in Wonderland. Now, with regard to SR Technics, very, very important, because workers are looking for a solution here, I say bring the workers who are the experts in this into the heart of the management of this on the basis of public ownership, and they will find the way to deal with these issues and to continue to give the excellent service
that
they have.
How do they bring the cost base down, Joe?
That's how you deal with the problems of cost and of everything else. But we do have to challenge as well this idea that we should go along unthinkingly with the race to the bottom in terms of the cost of everything. It's not
one of the big issues.
It's not sustainable, Pat. If we want to take that logic and carry it to its extreme, we will have workers in Ireland working for Chinese level of wages. In that case, who will buy the goods that they create? Because one of the problems in China is the wages are so low, they can't buy the goods that they produce. They are dependent on the export market. Now, if you reverse the situation, you will have a worse crisis in this country, as a matter of fact. But that's the logic of capitalism, a crazy system that has outlived its usefulness, and that's why we now need a debate on the new democratic socialist alternative.
All right. The electorate didn't go along with you the last time out. Do you think if you had a snap election tomorrow, Joe, they might give you the nod this time?
Well, I'm very confident from talking to people at all levels and people coming talking to me that there was a huge support for the idea of an alternative. I will be standing in the Euro elections in June to give the people of the Dublin capital the alternative of democratic socialism. And we never take for granted the votes or the support of working people, but I certainly am very confident that if there was a Dáil election, that yes, I would be re-elected to the Dáil and put up a real opposition, because I do not, unlike Labour and Fine Gael, I do not agree that working people have to take the pain here, which they agree with. Working people shouldn't pay a penny of this crisis. Where are the billions that Ulick MacEvady's friends made over the last 10 years? Where are they salted away? Which tax havens? Bring them back and put them...
I've tried to explain to you, they're in infrastructure in Ireland Inc. That's where the billions are.
They are in my foot. They're building signal. They're building signal towers in Canary Wharf, in Chicago, in Salzburg, and elsewhere, and salted away in tax havens. Bring back those billions. They were made by the labour of Irish workers, by the profiteering and the suffering of young people of massive mortgages. Bring them back, democratise them, use them to develop our services, and on that basis, working people won't have to carry the can for this crisis. The people who caused it will carry the can.
Okay, last words to you, Ulrich.
Well, essentially, look, what we have cooperated on this issue. We're not going to solve this problem with Joe's solution. But essentially, if we don't get our act together, we will be in a depression for 10 years. So we need bankers, unions, and the public cooperating to get us out of this problem.
All right. Two sides of a story. Ulrich McEvady and Joe Higgins, thank you very much. We'll take a break.